In today's quest, we explore the beginning of the end for the Vandal Kingdom. This is the Quest for Power. Welcome back to the Quest for Power, where we are ranking and reviewing all of the European monarchs from the early Middle Ages to World War I. We are your rankers and reviewers, Scott and Michael, and we had the distinct pleasure of reviewing the ever-so-iconic Geiseric the Cruel.
He was fun. I enjoyed him last week.
Yeah, it's a nice little like breath of fresh air. Well, also again, we get the joys of the sacking of Rome, I guess. Or is it really the sacking of Rome, or is it just like the picking clean? Like, because when I think sacking of Rome, I really do feel like when people say, oh, you know, Rome was sacked, I really do feel like that people like in the spirit of Rome, like, you know, truly dying, it's like, oh, that's the Vandals. But when it comes to like the sacking of Rome, I feel like people talk about the Visigoths because, you know, they're the ones who kind of stormed the place. It feels like that they're kind of mixed and matched because, you know, we, in the sake of condensed history, we say, oh, Rome fell because of
barbarian tribes. Yeah, Germanic barbarian tribes. And they don't really like distinguish like that. Oh yeah, the Visigoths and the Vandals are completely two separate people, and in their case they hate each other, so they really aren't the same people. So they're like big time rivals, as we keep getting into the but what's interesting is like Alaric's sack, it was much more violent, it was much more brutal, there was blood in the streets, and even though like he sectioned off churches and stuff, like you couldn't attack or anything like that, it was still pretty brutal. Yet that didn't do nearly the amount of damage that Geiseric did with his peaceful sacking, where he just took everything that was and wasn't like nailed down.
Yeah, like I said, just the methodic kind of picking clean of everything. It's kind of amusing, but
yeah, it was. It's always interesting to watch Rome, and we're gonna keep watching Rome fall over and over and over again from all these different viewpoints. Like from the Visigoths, you saw from their viewpoint, it was something that happened, you know, way far away a little bit. Like they were a nuisance, but we're on to, you know, bigger fish to fry. We're dealing with the Franks. Versus the Vandals are directly involved in the fall of Rome. And for crying out loud, as we explored last week, like one of the Roman princesses is married to, well, today's king, Hunneric. And it's much more personal to them when Rome falls.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, but in order for us to not fall like Rome, we gotta improve.
Yes,
gotta
do
what Rome didn't. We gotta improve. Gotta get better.
How do we do that?
Easy. Podchaser. Give us a review. We crave feedback. Give it to us. Podchaser.com. Or you can give us an email, at which some point Michael will give us the actual email, as he does in every episode.
I'll give it to you right now. It's questforpowerpod@gmail.com, and we will read every 5-star review from Podchaser at the end of the show. So if you want to talk about something directly live on the show, you can go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. Otherwise, if you email us and I find it like interesting enough alone, and just that, we'll discuss that too on the show. We are about to have a whole host of kings where we may need something else to talk about, because we are at the top of the roller coaster. It's like the top thrill dragster, I think, at Cedar Point, that's it, where we have Hunneric's reign, not Hunneric's, Gunderic's reign. There's so many icks.
Or Geiseric.
No, we have his his brother's reign, the first king that we review, Gundaric's reign, which is like the steady, you know, rise. And then we have Geyseric's reign, where we just skyrocket forward. And then every other king afterward is a skyrocket downward. So we just get to explore the utter complete collapse of the Vandal kingdom. And honestly, it should be called the Geyseric kingdom, because he's the only one who did anything with it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I feel. Just from the connotations and everything else we've talked about, it's just been kind of everything else has been a little bit of, sounds like it'll be a little bit of a slump, but you know, that just means that there will be, the faster they fall, that means there will be more room for us to cover other people.
Yes, and to tear them apart, because that's always a good time. Speaking of tearing apart, we haven't done raiding online in a while, and by a while I mean over a week. What have you been up to?
Ah, geez. What have I been up to? Probably a lot of Age of Empires, trying to prepare for D&D. You know, trying to figure out, you know, a new player getting into the game. So it's like trying to craft on how you may introduce their character.
I mean, you fly by the seat of your pants when you're DMing anyway. You do a really, I think that's like when you are at your best, is when you're up with stuff on the fly. So I think you'll be able to do really well at it.
Yeah, it's just like you got to have at least a little bit of thoughts in your head beforehand. But yeah, it is true. I do kind of just wing it a lot of the time. So
yeah, which makes you a perfect co-host for this, where I have to, you know, meticulously go through the sources and everything, and then you just wing your reactions and such.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I've been training my whole life for this very moment.
This very moment in time. Alrighty, speaking of sources, we have once again Jordanes from the Visigoths' point of view, and we will continue to have him for quite some time, anytime the Visigoths are involved, because he must exalt them and tear everyone else apart. And then we have Victor Avida, who is a contemporary historian who wrote in detail about the persecutions of the Catholics under the Vandals. He wrote books that were dedicated to how horrible the Arians were to the Christians in the Vandal kingdom. And of course, we have our favorite Victorian Gibbon, who paints Geyseric as a savage tearing apart the fabric of Rome, because the Victorians loved Rome and did not like the barbarians for some reason.
I mean, he did tear the fabric of Rome apart. That's literally a pretty fair characterization.
He kind of did do that. That is true.
It's not character assassination here.
Yeah, no, that's truth. Yeah, you're right. Anyway, on to the main quest. Alrighty, so we're in the chambers. The heralds enter the room and announce, "All rise and do reverence to Hunneric, first of his name, king of the Alani and Vandals." You are going to be shocked when you hear this. We do not know when Hunneric was born.
Oh my god. Yeah. I'm sure they didn't keep birth certificates back then.
No, they didn't really care about who you were before you became anything. His father, as we stated in the last episode, was Geyseric the Cruel, who built the Vandal kingdom that Hunneric now rules over. And, I don't think he will ever amount to anything like Geyseric, which is always, every time we have a great, magnificent leader, their children that come after are always just a huge disappointment. And I know we're really setting up for a wonderful episode, but don't get me wrong, the disappointment is fun to go through.
Yeah, that's what the rating system is for. Like,
of course.
It's the highs and the lows that make for a good time.
that's why we like roller coasters, the up and downs.
Well, you like roller coasters. I do not.
I like water coasters. Those are fine, but not actually roller coasters. Those terrify.
I hate heights.
Yeah. I'm fine with heights. It's just something with roller coasters. I don't like the drop. I can go twist and turn all day long and go really fast, but
it's going up. I hate going up.
Oh, that too, because you know you're going down. That's
Once I'm going down, it's usually fine. Like I've been on at least a couple roller coasters, and it's just like it's the tension. I hate it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
Like I said, and also it's like heights, right? Like it's going up. Like when you're going down, you're like, yeah, ground. That stuff's safe. It's where the good stuff is, you know?
You just don't want to hit it at a very high rate of speed.
Yeah. But yeah, I've been on a couple like rides here and there, and it's like, I think the most miserable ride being like the Tower of Terror.
I've heard about that, where it's
the seatbelt was loose.
Drops. Ooh, no, no.
Yeah, so
you.
Like when you were going down, I didn't remember just lifting off the seat, and I was like, oh, this is awful. Like I feel like I'm hanging on for dear life. Oof. Apart from that, like it might have been kind of fun, but like it was literally like going up, because it's all indoors. It's an indoor ride.
Oh, okay.
There is some views that go outside, but like for the most part it's indoors, because you're supposed to be in an elevator shaft is the idea.
Oh god.
So it was basically the thoughts of like going up were like, here we go again, and then going down was shit 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 shit, and then you'd hit the bottom, I'd be like, ow, and then like that kept going on for like, I don't know, what felt like 5 minutes or something.
You didn't like tighten the belt or anything when you were finally on the ground? Oh yeah. Oh, that would be terrifying. I would be losing my mind.
Yeah, I was not having a great time. Thankfully, I think I had like a little like handhold that I could kind of like try and like, you know, anchor myself with, because I was like, man, this is a rough ride.
I mean, the closest I can come to that is we were hiking in or backpacking in the Rockies, and I almost fell off. I did fall off like a cliff area when I was looking for the path, and turns out the path wasn't there, but thankfully I had a rope tied around me and the people caught me. But that wasn't fun either. That was kind of terrifying. So
never again.
Yeah.
So all right. Well
back to Hunterick.
Yeah. We're talking about our awful falls, so let's get back to Hunterick's fall.
Yes, exactly. We know he has a mother, but that's about it. There's no knowledge of her name or history anywhere. The Vandals didn't seem to really care for women, except for there's one queen down the road that we'll talk about, but that's because she causes problems for another king. So, I mean, they just were worse than the Visigoths. At least with the Visigoths, we got names. His father, in 435, sent him as a hostage to Rome as a pawn in some sort of agreement between him and Rome. So, real good fatherly figure, you know. That's stuff to look up to.
I'm sure he was at least taken care of somewhat well.
Yes, hostages sound a lot worse. I mean, they were bad, because if your father did anything rash or anything, you would just, your throat would be cut. But for the most part, they were like part of the court, you know. They let's put it this way, their life was way better off than a peasant who had to work, you know, day and night in the farms for like little to nothing.
Oh yeah, well apparently Geiseric did not act harshly enough, because Hunterick made it through. He lived long enough to make it to this episode. So
I wonder when he was released from Rome, because it makes it seem like he was in Rome at the time when Geiseric was coming to, you know, dethrone person we're about to talk about as Maximus. And I don't know why Maximus, he must have been so afraid of Geiseric that he just decided to run off, that he didn't, you know, slay his son as like retribution.
I guess. It feels like Geiseric's a guy who wouldn't stop if his son died.
No, I think if anything, that would just... maybe that was to save the city from not being murdered, because I bet you he would go full Genghis Khan if his son was killed as part of a prisoner.
Yeah, probably.
And so maybe that was more of a population thing. Anyway, as we have discussed in 3 episodes now, maybe 4 episodes, I think we talked about it even last week, he may have had a marriage, a first marriage to the Visigothic princess, who is the daughter of Theodoric, who also Jordanes did not deem worthy to have a name. But he does fill us in that Geyseric implicated her in a plot to poison Geyseric and had her nose and ears chopped off and sent those and her back to Theodoric. Yeah. So that's not good when your father is mutilating your wife and then sending her back to your in-laws, who now probably want to attack you.
Yeah, but you know what? They're like on the other side of the Mediterranean, so.
I mean, that is true. And they have had a history of having trouble with boats in the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
They never can quite seem to cross it.
Yeah, it's kind of a safe bet. I don't, honestly, with them being so far apart, it kind of does feel a little silly to have the marriage in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if it was because the Visigoths, like, up to that point were, like, a little bit more stronger, but it's not like the Vandals wanted that alliance or would have wanted that alliance, or maybe they did at one point, and then the Visigoths just completely collapsed, and the Vandals went, we just want to rid ourselves of that alliance because they are not doing us anything, you know, it's what have you done for me lately type deal. But another thing, quickly for the story, for those who have been listen to our previous episodes. This story is a little suspicious because it comes from Jordanes, who has a vested interest in portraying the Visigoths in a good light while portraying their bitter rivals, the Vandals, as evil. And it's not corroborated by any other source other than Jordanes. And we know that the other sources hate the Vandals with a burning passion. Just about everyone hates the Vandals because of Geyseric just took them to town, that they would have included a story like this. And I believe I was also hearing this on a different podcast, but it seems like the cutting the ears and the nose is like a common trope in stories because apparently it happened in one of the Viking sagas. So that was more evidence to me that this wasn't real, because it just didn't make sense that any of this would have happened.
Yeah. I mean, but you can't just make stuff up in a book, though. Just because it's, hey, everything on the internet is true.
I mean, yeah, exactly. And the other thing is, Hunneric was a Roman hostage at this time. If she was to have poisoned Geyseric, or even be implicated in that plot, she would have to be living over in Carthage, where Geyseric is. Wouldn't Hunneric and his wife be living together at the same time?
You'd assume, but who knows?
Yeah, like, that was the other thing that I was like, oh, this is a little suspicious. Anyway, whatever the truth is, in the mid-440s, he was available to be betrothed to the 5-year-old Roman princess Eudocia when his father Geyseric put the screws to Rome and forced a marriage between the two families, which gave Geyseric legitimacy over rule in Carthage, which was previously Roman land. Quite a bit of mouthful, but obviously we get to see the beginnings of having 5-year-olds married to cement alliances and peace, which is kind of scary and frightening at the same time. Well, I guess it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Disgusting at the same time.
Yeah. More disgusting, but I feel like that's, you know, that those were just the times, right?
Yeah, unfortunately. However, the betrothal was broken and Rome unwisely told Geyseric to go pound sand and that the marriage was off. And before Rome could do anything, they decided to start fighting amongst themselves, and Eudocia's father, Valentinian III, was assassinated by his general Petronius Maximus, which is still a great name, no matter how many times we say it, even though he was pretty pathetic. Maximus, then being the gentleman he was, forced Eudocia to marry his son Palladius when he forced himself on her mother Eudoxia. Not a great guy. And as we discussed last episode, there's rumor that Eudoxia wrote a letter to Geyser basically saying, please, you know, please help me, rescue me. And he didn't need to be told twice to go march into Rome and take everything they have.
That's what she wanted, right? Wanted him to take everything from Rome, right?
Yeah, I think that's what she wanted him to do, was just to sack Rome, take everything, including her and her children, and force them back to Carthage on a boat. I think that was nice. And then also in 460, Eudocia and Hunneric finally tied the knot in a lovely romantic ceremony, I am assuming, with all the pomp and circumstance of a decaying empire. And then their son Hilderic was born shortly after. Sometime after Hilderic was born, but before Geyseric passed away, Eudocia, who was Nicene Christian, today Catholic, left Hunneric, who was Arian Christian due to religious differences, and lived out the rest of her days in Jerusalem. So his wife had already left him before he became king. That's pretty rough.
Yeah, no queen.
Yeah,
the bachelor king.
And we don't hear of any more queens or romantic interests that he has because, well, when his father dies, he happens to be about 50 to 60 years old and he inherits the throne. So,
oh, yeah. Well past his prime.
Correct. Well past his prime. And being, for some reason, Geyseric, I said in last episode, I need to make a correction. I know, terrible me. I said that Geyseric said that he made it primogeniture so that the, you know, the old, his oldest son would inherit the throne. It is the oldest male relative. And okay. This is a key difference because for the reason of this, the rest of the Vandal kings are going to be all these old men that don't fight. So no wonder why they fell apart.
Yeah, that's that sounds like a pretty big flaw in the plan there, is that having a bunch of just like old guys running your government.
Yeah, especially in a Vandal warrior like society, like even, no matter what, they had to pretend they were like warriors or at least, you know, don armor, even though you're old and too old for that crap, that you still had to do it.
Can't lift a sword.
In the beginning of his reign, Hunneric saw what his father did to the Christians and the African Romano subjects and how he was pretty iron-fisted with them. And he thought, Dad was a little harsh, and maybe that wasn't the greatest thing. So, being the nice guy he was, he restored merchant property that his father seized from the Magnates. He stop persecuting Catholics. He thought, maybe you don't really need to murder people just because they believe in God and Jesus are the same person. Revolutionary thought. And then he allowed for the election of the position Bishop of Carthage, which was vacant for over 24 years because Geyseric was not about that life.
It sounds like he's inviting a bunch of dissidents into his.
Yeah, exactly. Like step four of your reign was, you know, eliminate your enemies before they eliminate you, not invite them in. Well, maybe something snapped, or he realized why his father was the harsh ruler he was, because all of a sudden, immediately, like not immediately. It was sometime after the bishop was elected. He just completely snapped. He banished all the Catholic bishops back to Corsica. He started persecuting the Christians with like renewed religious passion, like really went after them this time. And then he confiscated the property that he basically returned to the merchants. Yikes. What caused him to flip like that? Did he remember like a fight with his wife over religion or something?
Yeah, it really does feel like he's just projecting a lot of that to get all Freudian here. Feels like he's projecting a lot of that onto his governing, but either that or he came to his senses. It's like, you know, this large political body, religious / political body, may not be in my best interest.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. And Christians weren't the only ones he despised. He persecuted a group called the Manichaeans. Scott, have you ever heard Manichaeism?
Sounds familiar, but I couldn't tell you a thing about them, apart from the fact they're a group.
It is very complicated, and someday maybe I want to do a deep dive and, like, research the hell out of them. And Zoroastrianism, both of them are fascinating to me. But according to Wikipedia, so, you know, God's law, Manichaeism focuses on the struggle between a good spiritual world of light and an evil material world of darkness. And between those two, I don't know, you have what, you know, what is today. I don't know what it comes, but it comes from Mesopotamian religious roots. So, like, the dawn of civilization. Yeah. And the Gnosticism, which were, the Gnostics are, there's a many books that were left out of the Bible, and some of those were called the Mysteries of the Gnostics or something like that. I may be butchering this, but I remember it was something like that, where they believed some of what Christianity said, but not everything.
Yeah, so Christians.
And what's, well, here's the thing, is Christianity believes Jesus is, like, the savior. And what this religion, which was created, believes that a Parthian individual named Mani is the final prophet after Zoroaster, Buddha, and Jesus.
Mm.
That's a crazy mixture of religions all into one. That's like four religions into one religion.
Shit, I was just making fun of the fact that we tend to be selective on stuff, but... yeah, that's kind of crazy mix. Well, or rather, yeah. Maybe it's more like that. It was that we later broke them out.
They must have been stamped out, because I don't. Maybe there is groups participating in it today, but I haven't seen, like, too many things. A lot of it is historical texts related to them and the Roman Empire.
It's enough that I am at least familiar with, like, at least in, you know, I'm at least familiar with the name of, like, Zoroastrianism. So,
yeah,
can't tell you why, but I'm at least familiar.
I think Zoroastrianism came from the Parthian Empire, if I remember correctly. And I think they did something around fire. And I only remember that because I'm a pyromaniac and I'm going to remember anything that worships fire.
Fire cleanses.
Yes, it does. Anyway, back to Hunneric reverting to the ways of his father. Also, like his father, he had several members of the Hastingi dynasty executed and exiled if they were lucky enough to ensure that his son Hilderic succeeds him under the ruling of the oldest male succeeds to the throne. I don't know why he just didn't change it instead of killing everyone, but I guess he followed step four of his father, was kill your threats before they get you.
Yeah, doesn't really sound like he's doing all that terribly, so all things considered. Just a little sporadic.
Yeah, he's just kind of... Maybe it's just because we just don't have enough, but this is when things start going terrible. Towards the end of his reign, Hunneric lost quite a bit of land in Algeria to the Moors, who will later become a significant problem for both the Visigoths and the Vandals. And a little side note, Moor is a term that the Christian Europeans used to describe Muslim groups that lived in northern Africa, the Iberian Peninsula, Sicily, or Malta during the Middle Ages. And this particular group of Moors was like a tribe, almost like a barbarian tribe, you know, like the Visigoths were when they were nomadic, living inside the Vandal kingdom.
So these are the reason that you get a more Muslim presence in Africa and Spain, a little bit of Spain.
Yes, yeah. I think we eventually will cover the Muslim caliphate, in which we'll really get an in-depth view of how all of that presence comes in. And basically why we have the issues that are going on in the Middle East is basically because of the Crusades and all of that other nonsense that's been going on since medieval times.
What's that? Europe caused problems in the Middle East?
I know. How, oof, shocking.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Victor of Vida finally tells us that Hunneric dies on December 23rd, 484, by putrefaction and, quote, an abundance of worms.
Ugh.
That is terrible.
So he just got, like flesh-eating bacteria.
Pretty much. And some historians call bullshit on the way he dies for some reason. I actually kind of, this is one of the very few things that I believe that could happen, flesh-eating bacteria in those days.
Yeah, I don't know the total definition of putrefaction, but I do know that it basically just means, like, decay type. Or that's the connotation. So.
Yeah. Again, you didn't watch, and this hasn't been said in a while, the Game of Thrones House of Dragon, but the king dies like this sort of way, and it's really unsettling, to say the least.
I say, okay, I had to Google it, so yes, it is just body or organic matter decaying and rotting.
Yeah, so, like a living corpse, which would be horrifying.
The reason I knew that, because putrefy is a magic card. Oh, yeah.
There you go. Magic coming in handy.
Yeah, so, yeah, I at least had the connotation, so.
Yeah. Despite him murdering most of his family members, his son, Hilderic, did not succeed him. Instead, his nephew, Gunthamund, was crowned king. And that's all we have for Hunneric's reign.
Oh boy,
lots of.
It's pretty prophetic, you know. Maybe that's why they call bullshit on his death. It's because it's prophetic. They're like, oh, he's rotting and decaying, and you know, getting eaten by worms, eaten alive by worms. You know, it's almost a little too prophetic for the Vandals.
Yeah,
so, you know, it may have just he just died of natural causes, and they're just like, oh, well, this guy kind of sucked, so we're just gonna.
Because the Christians hated him. He was not, Hunneric was disliked just as much as Geiseric was by Victor of Vida. And the other reason they called bullshit on that is because it seemed apparently it was at, like, that little detail was like added in later. So I don't know how, if it was like a little script that was written at the end, like a note or something, like, or graffiti. But that's what the sources I was reading was talking about.
I'd believe that, yeah, that's kind of a fabrication, because it just feels like, well, yeah, just too prophetic, and an abundance of worms. It gives you just this very, like, unclean vision of this guy.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah.
It reminds me of being seized by the demon and, you know, dragged to hell that way.
You mean that wasn't real?
I don't know. Well, are you ready to rank him?
Yeah, let's. With what we got, we'll do our best.
Alrighty, sounds good. Royal power. How well did he acquire, wield, and maintain? He remained in power until his death. It wasn't until the end of his reign that he lost some land to the Moors. He seemed to keep his inner circle intact in terms of power. I mean, he had a lot of his family members killed, so, like, he took out threats before they could get him.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's all I got. I don't got much.
Yeah. You know, you get some points for maintaining his power a bit, but, you know, he kind of loses some. I don't know, give him like a 3.
I'll echo that, 3.
All right, for a total of 6. Look at that.
Infamy. So this is all I got. He is most well known for his persecution of Nicene Christians and Manichaeans, and by well known is he had a particular thirst for this. He really went after them. I mean, murder was not out of the question for him, to get people to convert or else. Or just to kill them, even if they didn't give him a chance to convert. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, it is a pretty big one, but
it is a big one. It is
a very I'll give him like a four.
I'm gonna give him a three.
Okay, so total of seven.
Religious passion. By all accounts, he was a fanatical Arian Christian. I mean, he tortured and persecuted Christians, Nicene Christians. So, gotta give him some points for that. I didn't see.
I mean, it's pretty good.
Any...
Like, it sounds like he went pretty hard on the. You know, I guess I say. First, I was going to give him, like, a 9, but I think I want to backtrack a tiny bit. Give him, like, a good, like, 7, because he was soft at first.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I don't know what's
that's
up with that.
That's good reasoning.
Like, yeah, it was a real soften up. Like,
yeah,
you know, he kind of snapped back, but, like, boy, was it just, like, you're just like, what on earth is with this guy? Like,
I wonder if it was, like, the stereotypical kid, I can do better than what my parents did. I think what my dad did was wrong, and then he quickly realized maybe there's a reason dad did this. That's the only thing I can come up with.
That's some dangerous talk there. You can't admit your parents are right.
I know. Terrible. Yeah. I'll give him a 7 too. I agree.
All right. For a whopping 14.
Stability. This one is out of 5. There was some instability the farther away you get from the capital of Carthage. So for him and every reign after, there's this nice stable, you know, around the capital area, around the capital. But the more you get further and further away from it, the lesser influence they have, and the more likely more raiding parties are going to come and raid your city. Or take away land, or set your farm on fire.
Oh, I'll give him a 1.
Yeah, I'll also give him a 1.
For 2 points.
Royal demise. Also out of 5. I'm going to say, just for story-wise, he died by worms because we got nothing else. dying by worms eating you the inside out and dying from putrefaction is... Oh,
it's awful.
It's awful. It is. If you were to hate someone, that is the way you would want them to go. Like, truly bitter hatred. I don't know if it's a 5, but I think it's a 4. Like, that's pretty rough.
I guess it doesn't feel like it is all that for me, but okay. So, I'm going to put it at a 2.
Oh, alrighty.
So, 2 and 4 for 6.
I think for mine is I actually got to see it on Game of Thrones and was, you know, saw it for an entire season, so.
It's just kind of like impactful. a slow, agonizing
death.
Yeah, like usually when it comes to stuff like that, depending on where it is, usually your best recourse is amputations. Like, that's about as good as it's gonna get for you. And like, from my understanding, is that oftentimes, even in today, that like amputations are like that is a that can be a cause of amputations, is things like flesh eating bacteria and like just things where your when your flesh begins to rot, that can often be your recourse. So no fun,
no
kind of yuck.
Horrific. Yeah, even I think if you get frostbite bad enough, you have to get amputated.
Yeah, well, that one's like, yeah, a little different, right? Because that's like you're just getting frozen. But like, you know, you can't, you know, one, like for a lot of like flesh-eating bacteria, sometimes that, you know, they can, you'd think with like a lot of today's modern medicine, they'd be able to like kill off, like,
oh yeah,
but kill it all off or something, but we're not always there. And then there's some stuff that's just resistant to antibiotics and things.
Mm-hmm.
So joys of stuff we'll have to look forward to in the future as more and more things theoretically become resistant to antibiotics.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that. I think the era we lived in is going to create some pretty nasty superbugs that are going to haunt us in the future. Alrighty, so for Dynasty, I got some new information. It was said he was a patron of public works and art. So that's kind of cool. Today's Roman ruins of Hadrimetum was renamed Honoricopolis, replacing the name Honoriopolis after Honorius. And then later, it was renamed Justinianopolis after Justinian wiped out the Vandals. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
So, yes. So I mean, he kind of had something. He had a city named after him for a hot second.
Till the next guy.
Yeah. His and Eudocia's son, Hilderic, does end up reigning despite not succeeding his father directly. So... he's also got that going for him.
Not much to go with.
Yeah. But I do... you talked about coins last week, so I was proactive, and I found a coin minted in Carthage during his reign. So if you want to take a look, we'll post these on Facebook. Kind of horrific.
I'm not sure what that picture on the left... I mean, I know what it's supposed to be, I guess. It's a person, but and wearing a helmet. In, you know, some armor.
Yeah.
But, and there's like some like leaves stamped on the edge there.
Yeah.
It's not
great.
It's not great, but it's, I don't know. It's surprisingly good though. Although I would never be like, oh, that's our, you know, Lord, I don't know, Geyseric the Cruel.
Yeah, well, that's supposed to be Honoric, I think. Each king,
is it?
Yeah, each king stamps their face on it after one passes. So for each king, like successive king, I found like coins for each of them, and they're basically kind of the same, but kind of not.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty fair, but
so
look, what is this coin made out of? Lead.
I think this one is lead. A later king is going to reform how the coinage system, and that's exciting stuff.
Because usually you want to use softer metals, and
lead
was used for
metals.
Great many things due to its softness.
I don't know what this particularly was, but they also wanted to use it out of precious metals, so it was actually worth something. Because if you debase the currency, that's how rapid inflation goes.
Yeah, but...
alrighty. So how much do you give for all of that?
3.
I'm going to give him a 2.
Yeah. Alright. So, for 5.
Alrighty, how many is that out of total points?
20 and 20 for 40.
Ooh.
It evened out in the end.
How the mighty had fallen. 40's not terrible. It's not 0 or like 20, but
yeah,
it's not great. I think he did well in the religious and the infamy for the persecutions. Those really gave him the amount of points.
His saving grace. His Hail Mary, if you will.
Was his Hail Mary enough? Will he be raised to High King, reduced to a pathetic lesser lord, or burned at the pyre?
Hell no. His Hail Mary was not enough.
No, it was not. I think burn him. I set him on fire. Get him out of here. We're done. Persecute him like you did with the Nicenes.
Get out of here and take your plague with you, or flesh-eating bacteria.
Yeah, we need to burn the flesh-eating bacteria so it doesn't spread.
Get out of here.
Well, you got anything else to say about Honoric? He was kind of
a dud.
He was kind of a dud after we had the wild ride of Geyseric, who's going to have to sustain us for a hot minute.
Yeah, marries a Roman princess and loses her too. The whole...
I didn't even think of that, yeah.
So, angry man takes strife with religious ex-wife out on populace.
That's a great one. That's a great way to describe him. I like
that's
that
a headline right there.
That is a headline.
So yeah, not great, but at least it was something a little interesting to talk about.
Yeah, a little different. We'll move along in the story. Well, before we close out, I'd like to thank all of you for listening to that, and hopefully you got some enjoyment either by us making fun of him or just learning something more about the Vandal Kingdom, because we're not really talked about much. And referring our podcast to your friends and family, every new listener is going to help build our little village into a great big kingdom. As we have said at the top of the show, if you want to expand your influence, be like Geyseric and not like Hunterick, and have your thoughts spoken on this podcast, please go to the Podchaser link in the show notes. Really easy. Have it right there for you. Click follow. Give your favorite history nerds 5 stars. If you don't want to give us 5 stars, that's okay. It just hurts our feelings a little bit. And then tell us who your favorite king or queen is if you got nothing to talk about, and why they fascinate you. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. Until next time, the king is dead.
Long live the worms.